penalty. Well, they didn't, and we're about 3 seconds away from getting assaulted or thrown out. So let's move on, shall we? Move on, huh? You mean what you should be doing right now instead of obsessing over one trivial comment? I clench my teeth. Sorry if it bothers me that one of the guys I live with thinks I'm nothing but a fluffy sorority girl. You know who else was viewed as a fluffy sorority girl? She challenges. Elle Woods. And you know what she did? She went to law school and showed everyone how smart she was. And then she became a lawyer and everybody loved her. And her slimy ex tried to win her back and she sent him on his way. The end. I have to smile. Though her recap of Legally Blonde isn't quite a parallel of my own life, since I won't be going to law school despite the fact that everyone else in my family has. Well, except for Dean. He followed his own path, deciding at the last minute to bail on law because he realized he'd rather coach hockey and work with kids. If my parents were rich snobs with sticks up their asses, they'd no doubt be horrified that Dean Hayward De Laurentiis became a gym teacher. Fortunately, my parents are awesome and supportive, and now Dean's paved the way for me to be able to veer off course, too. Once I decide what I want to do, that is, I love fashion, but I don't know if I want to design clothes, and fashion merchandising doesn't interest me much either. My goal is to see how the rest of my college career plays out before I make any final decisions. In senior year, we have work placement, so I'll get an even better idea of what I like or dislike. It doesn't matter how other people see you, Brenna finishes. It's how you see yourself. She stops abruptly, then curses up a blue streak as Harvard ties up the game.
How do you like them apples? Her new arch-rival yells.
How would you like an apple shoved up your ass? She retorts, but her tone is absent-minded and her gaze is still glued to the game. Her eyes fill with admiration for one brief moment before narrowing angrily. Ugh. Connolly. Why does he have to be lightning on skates? That's a bad thing? It is when he's on the other team. Oh. Whoops. It's obvious I need to study the Breyer roster. I only know Fitz, Hunter, Hollis, and a couple others I met in Brooklyn on New Year's. So he's the enemy. Damn right he is. He's dangerous. If he gets you one-on-one, you're screwed. Doubly screwed if it's a breakaway. She points to Breyer's side of the rink. And so is that jerk who's got Hollis pinned behind the net. That's Weston. I don't like him either. I went to school with a guy named Weston. He played hockey, too. Her head swivels toward me. Swear to God, Summer, if you say you're friends with Brooks Weston, I'm punching you. I stick out my tongue at her. No, you won't. And we're totally talking about the same guy. How weird is that? I didn't realize Weston went to Harvard. For some reason, I thought he was on the West Coast. When I notice her glare, I grin. Relax. We're not BFFs or anything, but we did hang out in high school. He's a fun guy. He's an evil demon goon. Doesn't make him any less of a fun guy. True, she says grudgingly. I just don't like the idea of my friends fraternizing with the enemy. She raises her index and middle finger, then points them back and forth between her eyes and mine. I'm watching you, Greenwich Barbie. Smiling broadly, I lean in and smack a kiss on her cheek. I love you. You're my soulmate. You're such a dork. Rolling her eyes, she refocuses her attention on the game. Watching live hockey is such a rush. It's fast-paced, intense. If you take your eyes off the ice even for a split second, you might come back to a completely different game. Harvard was on the attack before. Now it's Breyer's turn. Our forwards rush toward Harvard's zone, but they're offsides. Brenna curses impatiently. Come on, boys! She shouts. Get it together!
Can't get nothing together when you suck! Her heckler crows.
She gives him the finger without turning around. There's a face-off to the left of the Breyer net. The centers are coiled rattlesnakes ready to pounce as they wait for the puck to drop. Nate's the center, Brenna tells me. That's Fitz on his right, Hunter on the left. My gaze unwittingly shifts to Fitz. His jersey number is 55. I can't see his face because of his visor, but I can imagine the lines of deep concentration creasing his forehead. The puck drops, and Nate wins the face-off. He gains possession but passes the puck off immediately to Fitz, who skillfully stick-handles it. decking out two opponents. It's hard to believe someone so big could be so graceful. His 6'2 frame flies into Harvard zone, and excitement dances in the air for anyone wearing black and silver. The puck was dumped behind the net, and Fitz chases after it. He slams someone against the boards and wedges out the puck with his stick, then flicks a quick shot at the net. The goaltender easily stops it. But I don't think Fitz was trying or expecting to score. He was creating a rebound for Hunter, who shoots a bullet at the net. The Harvard goalie stops that one, too, just barely. Brenna wails, "Why?"
"Because we're better than you," her new best friend sings.
It happens again. I turn my head for one measly second to glare at Brenna's heckler. And when I look back, Breyer doesn't have the puck anymore. A Harvard player passes to Weston, who snaps it to Connolly, and I suddenly remember Brenna's warning about what happens if this particular player gets a breakaway. "Get him!" I urge the Breyer defenseman, who's chasing after Harvard's captain. But nothing can keep up with Lightning. Connolly is too fast. He turns into Keanu Reeves, moving all Matrix-like, left and right, speeding away from his would-be defenders. If there was dust on the ice, every Breyer player would be left in it. Brenna moans and hangs her head. Connolly shoots. Brenna doesn't even look. I do. And I can't fight my disappointment as I watch the puck fly past Corson's glove.
"Goal!"
A voice blares out of the PA. Seconds later, the buzzer goes off to signal the end of the game. The Harvard fans erupt with joy as Breyer loses. After the game, we don't immediately leave the arena. Brenna wants to say hi to her dad before he boards the team bus back to Breyer, and I want to track down Brooks Weston. I remember he used to throw the best parties in high school. My parents are cool, but they knew better than to let me or my brothers have more than a few friends over. Mr. and Mrs. Weston, on the other hand, were always out of town, so their son had the huge mansion to himself almost every weekend. His backyard was legendary. It was actually modeled after the yard in the Playboy Mansion, grotto included. I'm fairly sure I made out with a guy or two behind the man-made waterfall. "I'll meet you out front in 10, Brenna says. "And if you're dead set on chatting up the enemy, at least try to get some trade secrets out of him." "I'll do my best, I promise." She disappears into the crowd. I thread my way toward the wide hallway outside the team locker rooms, where I encounter a handful of security guards and a slew of females. Brenna warned me that the hockey groupies linger after the games, hoping to catch the eye of a player. I remember this phenomenon from my brother's games, too. I stand a short distance away and shoot a quick text off to Weston, banking that he still has the same number from high school. "Hey, it's Summer HDL, here with a friend and waiting for you outside locker room. Come say hi. Would love to see you." I include my name just in case he deleted my number. There's no reason he would, though. We're not exes. Didn't part on unfriendly terms after he graduated. I decided to give him 5 minutes, and if he doesn't show, I'll go find Brenna. But Weston doesn't disappoint. Barely 2 minutes pass before he's barreling toward me.
"Yes! Summer!"
He lifts me off my feet and spins me around happily. And I'm sure the groupies who are waiting for him are plotting my demise. "What are you doing here?" He seems thrilled to see me. I have to admit, it's good to see him too. His dirty blonde hair is longer than it was in high school, almost to his chin now, but his gray eyes are just as devilish. They always had this gleam to them, like he was plotting something naughty. That's one of the reasons I never dated him, because he was, and I suspect still is, the definition of man-child. Plus, he went out with one of my friends, so girl code dictated he was off limits. "I go to Breyer," I inform him after he releases me. His jaw drops.
"Are you shitting me?"
"Nope. Started this semester."
"Weren't you supposed to go to Brown?"
"I did."
"Ah, okay. What happened to that?"
"Long story," I confess. Weston slings one big arm over my shoulders and lowers his voice conspiratorially.
"Let me guess. Partying and shenanigans were involved, and you were very politely asked to leave."
My outraged glare lasts about half a second. I hate that we went to high school together.
I grumble. Why? Because it means I know you too well? He smirks.
Yes, I say grudgingly, but I'll have you know I wasn't even partying when the shenanigans happened. That's all I say on the subject, though. I'm still horribly embarrassed by the entire incident. Only my parents know the whole story, but that's because I've never been able to hide anything from them. One, they're lawyers, which means they can extract information as skillfully as any Russian spy. Second, I adore them and don't like to keep secrets from them. Obviously, I don't tell them everything, but there's no way I could keep something as big as a sorority house fire from them.
You have no idea how good it is to see you, Weston says, hugging me again.
Oh, yeah. The groupies hate me. The temperature in the hallway becomes utterly glacial when another player approaches us. The covetous looks and hushed wave of whispers tell me that he's the one most of them were waiting for.
Connolly, this is Summer, Weston introduces. We went to high school together. Summer, Jake Connolly.
The superstar who won the game for Harvard. Oh, boy. I really am fraternizing with the enemy. This is the guy Brenna hates. He also happens to be incredibly attractive. I find myself speechless as I stare into eyes the darkest shade of green I've ever seen, and I swear his cheekbones are prettier than mine. He doesn't look feminine, though. He's chiseled as fuck, like a young Clint Eastwood, which I guess would make him Scott Eastwood? Oh, who cares? All I can say is, yum. I managed to shake myself out of it. Hi, I say, sticking out my hand. What should I call you, Connolly or Jake? He gives me a long once-over, and I think he likes what he sees because his lips curve slightly.
Jake, he says, and briefly shakes my hand before pulling his long fingers back. You went to high school with Brooks.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone call Weston Brooks before. Granted, it's his first name, but even his own parents referred to him as Weston. Oh, yeah. We go way back, I confirm.
We used to party, Weston says, flinging his arm around me again, which is perfect, 'cause we're hitting up a party now. And you're coming.
I hesitate. Oh, I...
You're coming, he repeats. I haven't seen you in like 3 years. We need to catch up.
He pauses.
Just don't tell anyone there that you go to Briar.
Jake's interest is piqued.
You're at Briar?
Yep, I know, I'm the enemy. I glance at Weston. Where's this party?
A friend's place west of Cambridge. It won't be too rowdy, it's a very chill crowd.
I haven't gone out since New Year's Eve, so the idea of being social and having a drink or two sounds appealing. I'm here with my friend, I say, remembering Brenna. Weston shrugs.
Bring her.
I don't know if she'll want to come. She's a rabid hockey fan, and by fan, I mean she roots for Briar and hates your guts. He snickers.
I don't care if she roots for the devil himself. This isn't Gangs of New York, babe. We're allowed to socialize with people from other colleges. I'll text you the address.
When I notice Jake still watching me, I ask, are you sure you don't mind if we come?
Not my place, he replies with a shrug.
I don't know if he means it's not his place physically or not his place figuratively, as in he has no right to object. But I'll take it. Okay, I'll find my friend and meet you guys there. 11. Summer. This is blasphemy. Brenna hisses as we approach the front door of a detached house with a white clapboard exterior. She twists around, longingly glancing at the Uber that's speeding away from the curb. I roll my eyes. Come on, let's go inside. Her feet stayed glued to the porch. Don't do this to me, Summer. Do what? Bring me into the den of Satan! Oh my God, and people say I'm a drama queen? I tug her toward the door. We're going inside. Deal with it. Despite what Weston said about it being a chill night, the place is overflowing when we walk in without ringing the bell. The music's so loud, no one would have heard the doorbell anyway. And despite Brenna's almost comical expression of horror, the party instantly puts a big smile on my face. I don't know what it is about music and merriment and crowds that never fails to lift my spirits. At one point in my life, I thought about becoming an event planner, but I realized fairly fast that I don't actually like planning the parties. I like attending them. I get enjoyment out of putting together an outfit, picking a makeup palette, accessorizing, making an entrance, and then wandering around to see what everyone else is wearing. Maybe I need to be one of those interviewers who stands on the red carpet and admires the clothes. All I'd have to do is stick microphones in people's faces and ask who they're wearing. Damn, that actually sounds like it would be fun. But I think it's a bit too late to switch my major to broadcasting. I'd have to start all over again. Besides, I've never had much interest in being on camera. I don't like this. Look at these goons with their smug faces, she growls, jabbing her finger in the air. At that exact moment, a tall guy with scrawny arms poking out of his Celtics jersey backs directly into her pointed finger. Hey, what the? His protest dies when he spins around and sees Brenna.
Forget I said that, he begs. Please, please keep poking me. Poke me all night long.
No, go away, she orders. He winks at her.
Come find me after you've had a couple drinks.
My jaw drops. Ew, now you definitely need to go away. As Brenna and I push past him, I search the crowd for Weston or Jake Connolly, but don't see either one of them. I know Weston's here already because he messaged me about 10 minutes ago. I take Brenna's arm and drag her toward what I hope is the kitchen. I need a drink. I need 10. I pinch the fleshy part of her forearm. Stop being so melodramatic. It's just a party. It's a Harvard party. Celebrating a Harvard win. She shakes her head. You're turning out to be the most disappointing best friend of all time. We both know you don't mean that. I'm terrific. In the kitchen, we're greeted by a blast of raucous laughter. The cedarwork island is covered with various alcoholic beverages and stacks of red plastic cups and surrounded by a crowd of people, mostly male. No Weston or Jake, but the noisy boys at the counter are all big enough that they're most likely hockey players. Every single one of them sends an appreciative look in our direction, while the only females, two pretty blondes, narrow their eyes. Within seconds, they're dragging two of the guys away, under the pretense that they want to dance. I assume it's their boyfriends, and these chicks couldn't have been any more obvious that they viewed Brenna and me as threats. I've got bad news for them. If they're this afraid their men will stray, it'll probably happen. That lack of trust doesn't bode well for their relationships. A dark-haired guy in a gray Harvard hoodie checks us out and grins broadly. Ladies! He calls. Come celebrate with us. He holds up a bottle of champagne. Bubbly? Wow, you Harvard boys are so fancy, Brenna drawls, but I don't think any of them pick up on her sarcasm. Gray Hoodie grabs two empty glasses from a nearby cupboard, actual champagne flutes, and waves them at us.
Say when.
Brenna begrudgingly slinks toward him and accepts a glass. Over her shoulder, she defends her actions to me with, I'm a sucker for champagne. I hide a smile. Uh-huh. I'm sure she went over there for the bubbles and not the cute guy. At least, I think he's cute. He's got a mop of brown hair and a really nice smile. Plus, what I assume is a hard, ripped, lickable body underneath his sweatshirt and cargo pants. God, I love athletes. Which one are you? She asks him.
What do you mean?
What name is on your jersey? He grins.
Ah, gotcha. Number 61, McCarthy.
She narrows her eyes. You scored the tying goal in the third. McCarthy beams.
That was me.
Sweet wrist shot. My eyebrows soar. Wow. Is she actually complimenting him? I guess I'm not the only one who likes his smile. What's the matter? Your slap shot doesn't have enough power behind it? Or not.
Ouch,
he says with a mock pout. I should have known better than to believe she'd give a genuine compliment to a Harvard player. Still, I can tell she's warming up to the party. Her hips, ever so slightly, begin to move to the dance beat blasting from the living room, and she seems more relaxed now as she sips her drink. I'm about to take the glass McCarthy's holding out to me when my phone buzzes in my purse and keeps buzzing. I fish it out, realizing it's a call. The display tells me it's Hunter. Keep the bubbly on ice for me. I need to take this call. I fix each guy with a stern look, holding two fingers up to my eyes as I drift toward the doorway. Don't do anything stupid, I warn them. She's in good hands, McCarthy promises. I'm a total gentleman. He's a virgin, one of his teammates says. McCarthy nods solemnly. I am. Brenna narrows her eyes. Are you actually? Fuck no, he smiles again. And oh man, he has dimples. This guy is friggin' adorable. When I'm across the kitchen in a quieter spot, I answer the call. Hey, what's up?
Where you at, Blondie? Hunter demands. Figured you'd be home by now.
I ran into an old friend after the game and he invited us to a party. In the living room, someone raises the volume of the drum and bass track that just came on, and I swear the walls start expanding and contracting like a beating heart. The music drowns out Hunter's response. Sorry, what? I can't hear you. Suspicion fills the line.
Where exactly are you?
Cambridge. I told you I ran into a friend from high school. Oh, hey, you probably know him too. Brooks Weston? The silence that follows is thick with accusation. Hunter? Are you kidding me right now? You're at a Harvard party? Yes, and before you start lecturing me about fraternizing with the enemy, don't bother. I already got the speech from Brenna.
This is unacceptable, he growls. You can't party with the assholes who beat us tonight.
Why not?
Because!
I smother a laugh. Here's the thing about sports, sweetie. Sometimes you win games and sometimes you lose them. It would be really petty, not to mention stupid, of you to hate every single player on every single team that's ever beaten you.
We hate Harvard, he says stubbornly.
They're not even your official rivals. That's Eastwood College.
This is America, Summer. College hockey teams are allowed to have more than one rival.
My laughter spills over. May I go now, Hunter? I'm ignoring Brenna because of you. Although a quick glance reveals that she's not missing me at all. She's giggling at something McCarthy is saying. Den of Satan my ass. She's enjoying herself.
Fine, you can go. He sounds adorably grumpy, but for the record, I wish you were here.
A strange warmth fills my tummy. This flirtation with Hunter is confusing. I liked kissing him, but I live with the guy now, and I also live with Fitz, who I'm still attracted to despite how badly I want to punch him in the dick. Like I said, confusing. You could always come here if you want, I offer. A loud snicker echoes in my ear.
To the fiery pits of Lucifer? No fucking way.
Jesus. Do all Briar hockey fans think Harvard is Dante's Inferno? Or is it just the weirdos in my life? Harvard is a perfectly respectable school with a perfectly respectable hockey team that just happened to beat Briar tonight. Get over it, people.
We're having peeps over anyway, he adds. That's the other reason I called, to give you a heads up.
Okay, cool, I'm...
Finally!
A familiar voice booms from the far doorway.
Where have you been?
I grin as Weston strides into the kitchen. When I gesture to my phone and hold up a finger to indicate I'll be a minute, he shrugs and turns to his teammates.
Beer me.
I have to go, I tell Hunter. I'll see you at home. Catching up with Weston is a blast. We hole up in a room off the main living area, which might have been a dining room at one point, but is now a second living room, with two overstuffed sofas, a couple of armchairs, and a massive glass coffee table. Weston's on one end of the couch while I'm perched on the arm of it. The music's not as loud in here, which means we don't have to shout as we fill each other in on what's happening with the classmates we'd lost touch with. On the other side of the room, Brenna looks mighty cozy in McCarthy's lap. It's obvious he's super into her. He's got an arm slung around her and a hand resting on her thigh as they peer at something on her phone. I've glimpsed them kissing a few times since they sat down, and I've had to fight a smile each time. There is no way I'm not rubbing this in her face later.
Your friend is a smoke show, Weston tells me.
Right? And she's fun to be around, too. I find it hard to believe that Brenna and I met only yesterday. I feel like I've known her forever.
Speaking of fun, Winkini leans toward the table and taps out a line of the white powder I was pretending not to notice.
I've been around cocaine more times than I'd like to admit. It's the preferred party favor for prep school kids with time on their hands and cash to spare. I tried it once at a party in junior year, but it wasn't my thing. I prefer the warm buzz of alcohol to that frenetic, wired sensation. I'm not surprised to see Weston doing it, though. He always did enjoy his blow. So did most of the Roselawn hockey guys, for that matter. Dean once told me that coke and hockey players are synonymous, and now I'm wondering if any of the Briar guys dabble in it, too. I hope not. Weston snorts his line, then rubs his nose and shakes his head a few times, as if trying to clear it of cobwebs.
Sure you don't want?
Not my jam, I remind him. I take a sip of my beer. Don't you ever worry about drug testing? My brother got fucked his last season, thanks to a random drug test that was sprung on him.
Blow leaves your system after 48 hours, babe.
Weston rolls his eyes.
You'd have to be real dumb to get caught.
He plants a hand on my knee, but there's nothing sexual about the gesture.
So how you liking Briar? Better than Brown?
Classes haven't started yet, so I can't say one way or the other. The campus is gorgeous, though.
You living in the dorms?
No, I moved in with a few of Dean's friends. Actually, one of them is Hunter Davenport, your old Roselawn teammate.
No shit! You're shacking up with Davenport?
Platonically.
No such thing.
I'm about to argue when I feel a subtle shift of energy in the room. Jake Connolly has just entered. And let me just say, the man's got presence. He strides in holding a bottle of Sam Adams, stopping in front of the armchair opposite our couch. The guy currently occupying the chair shoots up instantly. Connolly calmly takes his place. His dark green eyes flick in Brenna's direction as he sips his beer. Brenna is momentarily distracted from McCarthy. She takes in Jake's dark jeans, black Under Armour shirt, and Red Sox cap. Connolly, she says curtly, good game. He gives her a contemplative look. There was no sarcasm in her tone, but I think he senses the difficulty with which she voiced the praise.
Thanks,
he drawls, takes another sip of beer. McCarthy tries to get her attention by whispering something against her neck, but her eyes remain on Jake, and his remain on her.
Where do I know you from?
He says thoughtfully. Well, are you able to hear any of your hecklers when you're on the ice? Because I'm usually the one screaming obscenities at you, she offers helpfully. He sounds amused.
Got it. Briar Puck Bunny.
Ha! They wish.
You hang around the team? I've seen you.
Got no choice, she tips her head in challenge. My dad's the coach. Jake is completely unfazed. McCarthy, on the other hand, utterly appalled. He jolts upright, causing Brenna to nearly fall face first on the carpeted floor. Proving he's at least a gentleman, he regains his grip on her, then eases her onto the armchair before jumping to his feet.
Why didn't you say something?
He turns to Weston in betrayal.
Why didn't you warn me? Who cares, man? She's good people.
I told her about my busted knee. Coach wasn't gonna put it on the injury report next week. What if she snitches to her father?
So?
Weston's still not concerned.
So next thing I know, one of his goons is slashing my knee, you know? Oops, it was an accident, and suddenly I'm done for the season.
My dad runs a clean program, Brenna retorts, rolling her eyes. No Tanya Harding's on the roster. Weston snorts, Connolly grins, and damned if that doesn't make him even more attractive. Also, she continues, this isn't the CIA, and I've got better things to do with my time than spy on a bunch of college hockey players for my father. McCarthy loses some of his bluster.
Yeah?
Yeah. She rises from the chair. I came here tonight to chill with my friend, have a few drinks, and maybe fool around with a cute guy. His expression becomes hopeful.
We can still fool around.
She throws her head back and laughs. Sorry, big boy. That ship sailed when you practically threw me across the room because of my cooties. A couple of his teammates whoop with laughter. Poor McCarthy is not as amused. To my surprise, Connolly intervenes. Don't listen to her, man. She was never going to hook up with you. Brenna raises her eyebrows. I wasn't, huh? I don't think you know me well enough to make that call. He stares at her, his tongue coming out to moisten the corner of his mouth. It's extremely sexy. You'd never sleep with a Harvard player. She stares back for several seconds before capitulating. You're right. Never in a million years. Her gaze shifts toward me. Time to go, crazy girl. I'll get us an Uber. Probably a good idea. I lean in to give Weston a kiss on the cheek. It was so good to catch up, I tell him. And thanks for the invite.
Anytime. Hopefully we'll hang out again now that you're in the Boston area.
Absolutely. I stand up and glance at Jake. Have a good night. He just nods. 4 minutes away, Brenna says, holding up her phone. McCarthy is still standing close to her, not bothering to hide his disappointment. You could stay. He trails off, awaiting her response. Secretly, I think she totally would have fooled around with him. Harvard be damned. Unfortunately, he really did blow it with his overreaction to her identity. She takes pity on the guy, looping her arms around his neck and brushing her lips over his stubble-covered cheek. Maybe in another life, McCarthy. Smiling ruefully, he lands a light-hearted smack on her butt before she walks off.
I'm holding you to that!
On her way to the door, Brenna flicks the pithiest of looks in Jake Connolly's direction. His green eyes gleam with amusement as she disappears from the room. 3 minutes later, she and I are in the back seat of our Uber. Brenna addresses me in a grudging tone. That wasn't too atrocious. See? I told you it would be fun, I tease. Scowling, she jabs a finger in the air between us. With that said, I'm totally telling my dad about McCarthy's knee. I grin. I wouldn't expect anything less. Brenna decides to crash at my house when she finds out my roommates are having a party of their own. She confesses that she's a night owl and has a hard time falling asleep before 3 or 4 a.m. Me? I love a good after party like I love my Prada boots, so I'm happy bringing her home with me. To our dismay, everyone's gone when we walk through the door. My roommates are still up, though. Hollis and Fitz are on the couch, battling each other in a shooting game. Hunter is passed out in the easy chair, clad in sweatpants and a threadbare t-shirt with the sleeves cut off. The only evidence of a get-together is the dozens of empty beer cans and the faint scent of marijuana that seems to be coming from Mike's direction.
Get the fuck out of here, Hollis is growling at Fitzy. Stop cornering me! Stop hiding in the same warehouse if you don't want me to find you.
From the doorway, I watch as the soldier on Mike's side of the screen faces down the barrel of a scary-looking gun. On Fitzy's side, it's clear he has Hollis completely trapped.
Any last words? Fitzy asks. I never learned how to ride a bike.
Fitz bursts out laughing, a deep, sexy laugh that rolls out of his muscular chest, and dies the moment he spots me. Holy shit, that was funny. Brenna tells Hollis as she saunters into the living room. You actually said something that made me laugh, like, with you and not at you. He responds with a scowl.
Oh, hi there. How was Rome?
Rome? She says blankly.
Yeah, Rome.
His dark look travels toward me.
Right, Brutus?
I reluctantly turn to Fitz for assistance. What the hell is he talking about?
Et tu, Brute.
He murmurs wryly.
Davenport told us where you were, Hollis accuses, so don't try to hide it.
I wasn't going to, I say cheerfully. B, you want a drink?
Obviously.
From the armchair, Hunter cracks one eye open.
Only thing left is the bottle of Fireball.
He mumbles, haphazardly gesturing to the end table. I eye the whiskey bottle apprehensively. Feeling spicy? I ask Brenna. Always. Grinning, I duck into the kitchen in search of shot glasses. When I come back, Brenna is nestled on the other side of Fitzy, trying to convince him and Hollis that she was coerced into attending the Cambridge party.
"It was terrible," she bemoans. "Bullshit. She had the best time ever."
I set the glasses on the table, then glance at my roommates. "It's okay if Brenna stays over, right? I'm wondering now if I should have asked for permission." But Hollis waves his hand dismissively. "Of course you're staying over," he tells her. "My bed is your bed."
Fitz snorts. "Oh, honey, I wouldn't touch your bed with a 10-foot pole."
"Speaking of poles,"
he wiggles his eyebrows. "Keep it in your pants, Michael."
"Aw, have some mercy on him. He needs it tonight,"
Fitz says, slinging one tattooed arm around her shoulder.
"And no, I'm not jealous seeing that. Why would I be?"
I tear my gaze away and focus on pouring the fireball.
"Why does he need my mercy?"
"Because he shaved his entire body for a woman and got stood up."
Fitz looks like he's trying not to laugh. From his chair, Hunter doesn't bother refraining. He chuckles, albeit sleepily. I think maybe Hollis wasn't the only one smoking weed tonight. Hunter has barely moved since we got home.
"Oh, dear." Brenna reaches across Fitz's big body and pats Hollis on the arm. "My apologies, sweetie."
I study him as I finish pouring. He's wearing jeans and long sleeves, not a hint of skin. On a scale of 1 to 10, how hairless are you?
His lips curve. "Come here and find out."
This time Fitz reaches over, smacking Hollis on the back of the head.
"Enough, dude. Even I'm starting to get skeeved out."
Brenna and I clink our glasses, raise them to our lips, and throw back the shots. The cinnamon-flavored liquid burns a path all the way to my stomach.
"Jesus," I groan. My mouth and throat are on fire. "I forgot how potent this stuff is."
"Another one," Brenna orders. "I barely felt that." With a snort of laughter, I pour two more shots. As we drink our next round, I can feel Fitz's cautious gaze boring into me. I bet he wants to lecture me about the booze, warn me to slow down, but he keeps his mouth shut.
"Okay, I definitely felt that one."
Brenna's cheeks are flushed now. She wastes no time whipping off her tight black sweater, leaving her in black skinny jeans and a lacy, barely there camisole. Hollis's blue eyes smolder.
"Want to go upstairs? To answer Summer's question, I'm a 10. Completely hairless."
A giggle pops out of my mouth. "Right, as if that's going to entice her."
"Absolutely not," she replies. She reaches for Fitz's abandoned Xbox controller. "What are we playing?"
"Killer Instinct."
"Nice. I know this one. Let me play, Hollis. I want to blow his brains out a couple times."
Hollis beams. "All I heard was, I want to blow, and my answer is yes. Blow away, baby."
Sadly for him, she sticks to virtually shooting him in the head half a dozen times. I'm not particularly fond of watching other people play video games, so I peruse Hollis's Spotify library on his open laptop, make a playlist, and spend the next hour rocking out by myself while Brenna takes turns facing off against Hollis and Fitz. We down two more shots during that hour, and then another two, after Hollis insists there's no point leaving such a teeny tiny amount in the bottle.
"This is Briar,"
he shouts, as if he's acting out a scene from Gladiator.
"We finish what we start."
I'm drunk enough that his speech makes perfect sense to me. So the three of us polish off the fireball, while Hunter snores softly in the armchair and Fitz watches me with what I think is disapproval. I can't be sure, because my vision is a wee bit fuzzy. And the room might be a wee bit spinny, but that could also be because I'm spinning.
"I think it's time for bed."
Fitz's low voice rumbles in my ear. He comes up behind me as I dance to a Whitesnake song from Hollis's metal playlist. I was in the middle of a ponytail swishing move, so my hair whips him in the face when I twirl around. He doesn't even flinch, just plants one big hand on my arm to steady me before I topple over. "I'm not tired," I inform him, shrugging his hand off. Once again, I teeter on my feet, and once again, he grabs hold of me. Only this time, he takes it a step further. Before I can blink, my whole body is in the air. Fitz heaves me over his shoulder, and suddenly I'm staring at the back of his black t-shirt, while my legs dangle over his broad chest. I kick him. Put me down! Oh my God, Fitz!
No.
I kick him again. Harder. Put me down! Brenna, save me! Babe, you've been solo-moshing to hair metal for the last hour, I hear her say. I can't see her because Fitz is still caveman handling me. I think he might be right. I'll be up after this game. I catch a glimpse of her amused face before Fitz marches us toward the stairs. Seriously, I growl. Put me down!
No.
His arm is like an iron vise around the backs of my thighs. I mean it. I'm not some toy you can fling around. I'm a human being, and I have rights. All I get in response is a low chuckle. I can't believe he's carrying me upstairs, like I'm a 6-year-old who's past her bedtime and needs to be banished to her Hello Kitty bunk beds. Gritting my teeth, I slam one fist against his shoulder blade. He doesn't even budge. We're halfway up the stairs. I try a different route and pinch his deltoid muscles. When that fails, I go for the lats. He rears back as if he's been shot, then curses in annoyance. Stop that! I will if you put me down! I pinch him again, and again. He shrugs his back and shoulders to try to shake my fingers off him. For fuck's sake, Summer! No more pinching! He yells. Oh, but you're allowed to grab me against my will? I yell back. We're both breathing hard. I feel beads of sweat form at the nape of my neck in between my breasts. It's hard work trying to pry myself out of his grip. He reaches the top of the stairs and charges toward my bedroom, swearing the entire way because I won't stop pinching his stupidly muscular back. When did you become the fun police? I demand, when he finally sets me down, a little rougher than necessary. My feet connect with the floor in a hard thud. And what gives you the right to drag me upstairs? His brown eyes blaze at me. You were 3 seconds from falling over and smashing your head on a piece of furniture. Probably knocking yourself unconscious, too. Oh, my God. Why is everyone in my life so dramatic? I was just dancing. I'm dramatic? He roars, and I'm momentarily amazed because I don't think I've ever heard Fitz raise his voice. You freaked out on me yesterday for no reason. You accused me of implying you can't fucking read. Because you were acting like a condescending asshole, and you were acting like a brat, and now you're acting like my father, and you're still acting like a brat. We stop and glare at each other. He's visibly clenching his teeth. The cords of his neck are like overly tightened guitar strings. He looks like he might snap at any second. But after several beats, he releases a heavy breath and rubs his dark beard. I'm sorry about last night, okay? He mutters. I didn't mean to imply. It's fine, I cut in tersely. Summer. What? I'm serious. I don't think you're stupid. That makes one of us. I banish the self-effacing thought to the bowels of my intoxicated mind. Somehow even drunk off my face, I know better than to give him the satisfaction of seeing my insecurities. I ball my fists and press them to my sides. Fitz is still watching me, no longer angry or frustrated, but contemplative. Even now when I'm mad and aggravated by him, his presence affects me. My heart is pounding. My knees feel wobbly. Tingles dance along my spine and settle between my legs. When Fitz rakes his long fingers through his tousled hair, the tingles transform into a tight knot of need. He turns me on so badly. I want those fingers on my body. I liked you, I blurt out. His hand freezes in his hair. What? Nothing. Forget it. I'm drunk. I backpedal like my life depends on it, because Fitz isn't allowed to know that I was interested in him or that he hurt me. Telling him means admitting I'd heard every derisive word he'd spoken about me. A line cuts into his forehead. Summer. I said forget it. You're right. It's time for bed. Thank you so much for escorting me upstairs. The sarcasm oozes like molasses. Now will you please get out of my room? He hesitates for a second, then his shoulders roll up and stiffen, and he gives a curt nod. Good night. I let out a frazzled groan the moment he's gone. Damn it, me and my stupid mouth. I really need to stop blurting out exactly what's on my mind all the time.
A loud thump, followed by an even louder curse, jolts me awake the next morning.
I'm a light sleeper, so the slightest noise can pull me from a state of deep slumber into wide-awake panic mode. Wild-eyed, I sit up and check the time on my phone. It's 7:30 on a Sunday. Which one of my roommates is making such a ruckus? I must know this in order to know who I'll be murdering. They better not wake Brenna. I assume she's asleep next to me, but when I look over, I realize I'm alone. I swear she'd said she'd be right up last night. Damn it, someone mutters, Brenna's voice. I fling the blankets off and jump out of bed. I open my door at the same time two other doors swing open. Fitz and Hunter appear in their respective doorways, sporting boxers and some serious bedhead. All three of us gape when we notice whose room Brenna is exiting. She freezes like a forest animal that just heard a twig snap. She's wearing nothing but her camisole and black bikini underwear. Her jeans are slung over one arm, and her hair is 80s rock-level disheveled. She meets my eyes and shakes her head in warning. Not one word. I don't think I'm capable of words. My tongue is on the floor, rendering me speechless. Brenna is doing the walk of shame out of Mike Hollis's room? This is unfathomable to me. Hunter opens his mouth, but she silences him with a low growl. Not one word. Fitzy shakes his head in resignation, turns around, and closes his bedroom door. I'll call you later, Brenna murmurs as she passes me on the way to the stairs. I nod wordlessly. She's gone a few minutes later, the sound of a car engine telling me she arranged for a ride home. Wow, I say. To my surprise, Hunter follows me into my room and throws himself on the bed. His abs bunch up and ripple as he gets comfortable. That was unreal, he says drowsily. I stare at him. Is there a reason why you're lying in my bed? Not really. He rolls onto his side, thrusting out one long, muscular leg. He cuddles with my pillow and lets out a contented sigh. Night. Unbelievable. He's fast asleep within seconds, but I don't even have the energy to kick him out. It's too early in the morning, and I've only gotten about 4 hours of sleep. So I do what any tired 21-year-old woman would do. I crawl into bed with the half-naked man who's taking up residence there. Hunter makes a soft noise and then flings an arm over me, drawing me closer. At first, I resist, going stiff. Then I relax, allowing the tension to seep out. It's been so long since I've spooned with someone, and it's... Damn it. It's nice.
12. Fitz. Monday is the first day of the new semester, and I'm up before the birds. The sky is a navy blue brushstroke across a black canvas. A tiny glimmer of light begins to peek through the darkness as I stare out the kitchen window waiting for my coffee to brew. I'm looking forward to my classes today. I've heard nothing but phenomenal things about cinematography for games, and fundamentals of 2D animation sounds bomb. I'm a double major in fine arts and computer programming, which my old man never fails to lecture me about. He thinks it's an unnecessary burden, that I should focus only on the latter. Computers are the future of art, Colin, is his go-to argument. He has a point. Graphic design does operate mostly in a digital sphere these days, with people drawing directly on their computers or tablets. I'm guilty of it myself. But for me, there's nothing better than feeling the firm surface of a sketch pad under my hand, hearing the scrape of a pencil or the rasp of charcoal moving across the page. Drawing on paper and painting on canvas is so ingrained in me that I can't imagine ever relying solely on technology. I'm sure eventually museums will display only digital screens instead of canvases, and maybe it makes me a dinosaur, but that notion is a real bummer to me. Since my first class isn't till 10 and practice isn't till 8, I have plenty of time to monitor the beta progress of my game. I take my coffee upstairs and settle at my desk, or what Hollis likes to call Space Command Central. My gaming setup is a bit intense for a college student, complete with 3 high-def monitors, a programmable keyboard, a fully customizable gaming mouse, and a graphics card that cost more than I'd like to admit. But frickin' worth it. I reach for the black and neon green headphones hanging off the external speakers and slide them on. I watch a couple of streams, then check the private message board I set up for my beta group. Access to the game was by invite only, so the only people playing Legion 48 are the ones I chose and approved. On the chat feed, there are a few requests for cheat codes that make me roll my eyes. I skim those and search for usable data. The point of this version is to get the bugs fixed so that the final product is fully functional. Nothing jumps out at me. I sip my coffee as comments and questions pop up on the screen, the feed scrolling itself with each new line of text. I'm not surprised to see so many of the players online this early. Chances are they never went to bed. When I hear footsteps in the hallway, my head jerks swearily toward the door. Someone enters the hall bathroom and closes the door. A few minutes later, the shower comes on. I wonder if it's summer. Part of me hopes it isn't, and that I'll be able to escape the house and go to practice without seeing her at all. Every interaction she and I shared yesterday had been beyond awkward. And don't get me started on the night before, when I had to fireman carry her drunk ass upstairs. Her drunk, very fine ass. I'm talking smoke show, unbelievably firm, mouth-wateringly round, I want that ass.
I liked you.
I've been trying not to dwell on the 3 words she'd hurled my way. She'd been wasted when she said them, and I don't take much stock in alcohol-fueled declarations. More footsteps echo outside my door. This time I know for sure who it is. Hollis. He's mumbling to himself about how badly he needs to piss. I'm suddenly reminded of Brenna making that same walk down the hall. Hollis couldn't shut up yesterday about their hookup, acting like he'd scored a winning lottery ticket. I guess that's not far off the mark, since I'm fairly certain this is the first time Brenna's hooked up with one of us. Normally she avoids us like the plague, though I don't know if that's because she doesn't like hockey players, or because she's smart enough to know what Coach would do if one of us ever touched his precious daughter. Hollis, sadly, isn't smart. Fearless, yes, but not smart. Because if Coach ever finds out what he did, he'll tie him up naked and spread eagle to the net and practice his slap shot. I almost fall out of my chair as an ear-splitting scream pierces the quiet house. My blood runs cold and I'm on my feet in a heartbeat, lunging for the door. My brain goes caveman on me. Summer scream. Summer danger. Save Summer. Fists up, I throw myself into the hall and then skid to a stop when the bathroom door flies open. A boxer's clad Hollis is unceremoniously dumped at my feet.
No!
Summer shrieks.
You can't just come in here when I'm in the shower. That is unacceptable.
Oh, boy. She stumbles out, her blonde hair soaked in dripping water all over her wet, golden skin. Soap suds run down her bare arms, and it's obvious she grabbed the wrong towel because this one is too small. The top of it barely contains her breasts, and the bottom barely covers her thighs. If the white terry cloth slides 1 inch in either direction, we'll all be in trouble. My mouth goes bone dry. Her legs are impossibly long, and they're so fucking sexy I can't help picturing them wrapped around my waist. I gulp, hard. Meanwhile, Hollis looks dazed.
I was just taking a leak,
he protests.
I was in the shower,
she screeches.
And I locked the door.
Lock's broken.
Now you tell me that.
He rubs his eyes.
Don't see the big deal here, babe.
Don't call me babe.
Hunter's door swings open.
What the hell is going on?
His eyebrows shoot up when he takes in the scene.
What did you do?
He growls at Hollis.
I didn't do anything, Hollis grumbles.
He walked in on me in the shower.
I was just pissing. It's not like I got in the shower with you.
That's not the point.
She points at the bathroom door.
See that room? It's a sacred room. It's a temple, Mike. It is meant for one person and one person alone, like solitary confinement.
So is it a prison or a temple?
The bonehead asks.
Shut up,
she snaps.
And listen to me, Hollis. Unlike you, I don't have a penis.
Well, thank God for that,
Hollis, I warn in a low voice. He slams his mouth shut.
I am a woman, Summer continues. Her fingers tighten over the top of the towel to keep it in place. I'm a woman living with three men, and I have a right to privacy. I have a right to take a fucking shower without you barging in and pulling your dick out.
You didn't even see my dick, he argues.
That's not the point.
She throws her arms up in frustration. And just like that, the towel drops. Oh, sweet mother of Moses. I catch one glimpse of full creamy tits with pale pink nipples, one incredible, tantalizing glimpse before Summer slaps a hand and forearm across her chest. She manages to catch the towel before it falls, using her other hand to hold it over her lower body. Hollis looks stunned. Hunter's eyes are on fire. Me, I'm doing everything in my power not to look at her. I focus my gaze on a random spot above her head and speak in a surprisingly steady voice. It won't happen again, Summer. Right, Hollis?
Right,
he assures her. I nod in approval. First thing we'll do is get the lock fixed.
Why are you talking to the ceiling?
She demands. Swallowing a groan, I force myself to meet her eyes. Those big green depths reflect nothing but unhappiness and embarrassment back at me. She might be a drama queen, but she's right. She's living with three dudes and she deserves her privacy.
This is the worst bathroom ever,
she moans miserably.
There's no counter space, the lighting is so terrible I can't do my makeup, and now I can't even be alone when I'm taking a shower?
Summer, I say softly. She looks like she's going to cry, so I slowly walk toward her. Don't touch her, don't touch her, don't touch her. I touch her. Just my fingertips on her shoulder, but the contact sends a hot shiver up my spine. I'll fix the lock, I promise. Her body relaxes as she exhales.
Thank you.
She spins around and marches into the bathroom. The door slams in our faces. A moment later, the shower comes back on. Hunter and I exchange a quick look before turning to frown at Hollis.
What?
He says defensively.
Dude, you have two sisters, Hunter accuses. How do you not understand bathroom etiquette? Me and Fitz are only children and we know goddamn bathroom etiquette.
My sisters and I never shared a bathroom. With an irritated huff, he stalks toward my room. Where are you going? I demand.
To use King Collins, John.
He scowls at me.
Or would you rather I piss downstairs in the sink?
I quickly hold my arms out in a welcoming gesture.
It's all yours, bro.
2D animation is as fun as I expected it to be. Afterward, I leave the computer lab with my two buddies, Kenji and Ray. Since they're major gamers, they were at the top of my list for beta testers, and they can't stop talking about Legion 48 as we head outside.
It's brilliant, Fitz, Kenji is saying as he zips up his parka.
I pull a black wool hat over my head and shove my hands into a pair of gloves. I feel like January is never going to end. I swear it's like the planet goes into some fucked up time loop every year to make January 100 days long. And then the loop snaps apart and the rest of the year flies by in about 4 minutes.
Brilliant, Ray echoes.
We push open the exit doors and are greeted by a gust of icy wind. Frickin' January. Despite the cold, I can't contain a burst of excitement.
You're really not having any major issues so far?
None whatsoever.
Come on, there's gotta be something. We descend the wide steps toward the frost-covered sidewalk. The fine arts buildings are clustered together on the west side of campus, so almost all of my studios and lecture halls are located here.
I'm telling you, there's nothing, Ray says.
Nada,
Kenji agrees. My phone vibrates in my pocket. I pull it out and frown at the words private caller. Kenji and Ray are still engaged in an animated conversation about the game, so I signal that I'm out, and they take off walking.
Please hold for Kamal Jane.
A brisk female voice snaps in my ear. I freeze for a beat, then give a hasty laugh.
Right, nice try.
But she's already clicked off. This has to be a joke. Yes, I did apply for a position at Orcus Games, the billion-dollar game studio owned by legendary geek god Kamal Jane. But if this woman actually works for Orcus, I highly doubt she'd be transferring me to the founder and president of the company. That's like Mark Zuckerberg taking customer services calls at Facebook. I'm half a second from hanging up when a new voice fills the line.
Colin, hi, Kamal,
So I'm sitting here looking at your resume. Gonna be honest with you, Colin, you were a no for me. My pulse quickens. Either I'm hallucinating or that's seriously Kamal Jane on the line. I've seen hundreds of interviews with the guy and I'd recognize his fast-paced nasally voice anywhere. NCAA hockey? I won't lie, brother. It was an easy pass on account of the jock thing. I mean, most jocks I've met don't even know the difference between Java and C#. I'm glad he's not in front of me so he can't see the frown that creases my lips. I'm sick to death of the dumb jock stereotype. It's so archaic. Not to mention completely false. Some of the most intelligent people I know happen to be athletes. I keep my mouth shut, though. This is Kamal Jane, for Christ's sake. He designed his first multiplayer RPG at the age of 15, self-published it, and then saw it take off to rocket levels of popularity. He sold the game for $500 million, used the money to start his own company, and has been raking in the cash since then. This kind of trajectory in the gaming industry is virtually unheard of. The creator of Minecraft has nothing on this guy. But one of my interns came to me this morning, told me I needed to play this game of yours. Gotta tell you, Colin, as far as code goes, it's more simplistic than I'd like. Though let's get real, to me anything is simplistic if I haven't coded it myself. What got me? The assets. Oh lordy lordy, the graphics. All you? It's hard to keep up with Jane's rambling, but somehow I managed to answer. Yes, all me. Visual arts major at Breyer. Double major, I correct. Computer programming as well. Ambitious, I like it. Don't like the hockey background much, but I assume you're done with that, seeing as how you're applying to work for my studio. No plans to go pro after graduation? No, sir. A high-pitched laugh pierces my ear. Sir? Give up that habit right now, Colin. Call me Kamal or KJ. I prefer KJ, but whatever makes you more comfortable. All right, let me look at my calendar. Papers rustle over the line. I'm in Manhattan next Friday. I'll tell the pilot to make a stop in Boston first. We'll meet at the Ritz. Meet? I echo in confusion. I personally interview every potential designer and I do it face to face. You're on a short list with 6 other candidates. This will be competitive, he warns, but there's a note of glee in his voice. I get the feeling he might enjoy pitting candidates against each other. So 2 weeks from now, Friday. Yes? Yes? I say immediately. Working for Orcus Games would be a goddamn dream. It was my top choice, and I honestly didn't expect an interview. Like he said, it's competitive. Everyone wants to work for Kamal Jane, self-made billionaire. Good. I'll have my assistant email you the details. Looking forward to meeting you, brother. Looking forward to it, too. I'm shaking my head in amazement as I hang up. Did that really just happen? I have a job interview with Kamal Jane? Holy shit. I open my text window to see a message to Morris, but before I can start typing, my phone rings again. Not a private caller this time, but my father. As always, uneasiness starts circling in my gut. You never know what you're gonna get with my folks. Colin, he barks when I pick up. Dad has this brusque, no-nonsense way of speaking that comes off as rude if you don't know him, and grating if you do. Hey, what's up? I only have a sec before my next class. I lie. I won't take up much of your time. Just wanted to tell you that I'm bringing Lucille to your home game this weekend. She's been dying to see you play. Lucille is my dad's new girlfriend, though I don't imagine they'll date for more than a few months. The old man goes through women with a speed that is both impressive and disgusting. On the flip side of that, Mom claims to have not dated anyone since the divorce, and that was 12 years ago. And while Dad has no qualms bragging about his conquest to me, Mom equally has no issue bemoaning her life of celibacy. It's Dad's fault, of course. He shattered her trust in all of mankind, emphasis on the man. And according to him, Mom is to blame for his revolving door of girlfriends because he too can never trust again. My folks are exhausting. Nice, looking forward to seeing her. Still lying? For a moment, I consider telling him about my interview with Kamal Jane, but I swiftly decide that needs to be done in a joint email to both my parents. If I tell one before the other, the world will end. Will your mother be at the game? He says the word mother as if it's poisonous. If so, you should warn her that I'm bringing Lucille. Translation, you should make a point of telling her so I can rub it in her face that I'm seeing someone. She's not coming, I answer. Happy to defuse that bomb. I see. You must be very disappointed. Translation, she doesn't even care enough to watch your games, Colin. I love you more. I suppress an annoyed sigh. It's fine. Neither of you need to come to my games. Anyway, I have to go. I'll see you this weekend. The moment we hang up, the pressure weighing on my chest eases slightly. Dealing with the folks takes an actual physical toll.
Colin, hey!
I turn to find Nora Ridgway approaching. Nora was in two of my art classes last year, and this semester we have advanced figure drawing together. She's a cool chick, double major like me, in visual arts and fashion design. Hey, I greet her, eager for the distraction. It always takes a few minutes for the tension to completely drain from my body after a parental encounter. Class isn't until two, you know that, right? She smiles.
Don't worry, I'm aware.
She nods toward the building across the lane.
I've got history of fashion in 10 minutes. I saw you over here and just wanted to come say hi.
As she talks, her breath comes out in a visible white cloud. You need a hat, I tell her, noting that the tips of her ears are red.
I'll live.
I can see why she doesn't want to cover her hair. Cut in a pixie cut, it's jet black except for the ends, which are bright pink. She's got a cool indie vibe to her that I've always appreciated. Plus she has tats, a definite checkmark in the pros column for me.
How is animation? She asks. My friend Lara is taking that course and she was so pumped about it.
It was awesome. I grin at her. I guarantee it's more fun than history of fashion. Nora lightly punches my arm.
No way. Clothes are way more interesting than computers.
Agree to disagree.
And this course is taught by a legend.
Her light gray eyes sparkle in the winter sun as they fill with excitement.
Eric Lorre.
My blank look makes her laugh.
Former fashion editor for Vogue, GQ, Harper's, and he's the co-founder and former editor-in-chief of Italia, probably the most innovative fashion magazine for men. He's like the male version of Anna Wintour.
I draw another blank.
Editor-in-chief of Vogue and total goddess. She's my idol, and so is Eric Lorre. He's teaching two classes at Breyer this year, and he's the director of the year-end fashion show. I'm beyond excited. We're going to learn so much from him.
I wonder if Summer is in Lori's class today. I can't remember if she's majoring in fashion design or merchandising. I suppose history of fashion lends itself to either one, though. And speak of the devil. Summer appears on the cobblestone path, bundled up in a knee-length coat and a thick red scarf looped around her neck and hair. Her easy gait stutters for a step when she notices me. The moment her eyes lock, I remember her tiny towel sliding off her delectable body. That split-second glimpse of her wet, naked tits. A fleeting, dick-hardening tease. I don't call out a hello or raise my hand in a wave. I'm waiting for her to initiate the greeting. Only she doesn't. A few seconds tick by, then she frowns at me and keeps walking. I don't know if I feel offended or ashamed. Maybe I should have greeted her first.
Do you know her?
Nora has realized my attention's been diverted. Her suspicious gaze rests on Summer as she awaits my response. Yeah, she's a friend's sister, I say vaguely, deciding not to mention that we're roommates. I feel like that'll just open a conversation I'm not in the mood to have. Nora relaxes.
Oh, cool. Anyway, I have to run, but I'm thinking maybe it's time we grab that elusive drink we've been talking about for a year.
I laugh. Maybe we should. We'd talked about it last year in color theory, but my schedule makes it hard for me to date. We played phone tag for a while, and by the time I finally had a free evening, Nora was dating someone else. Clearly, she's single again.
Do you still have my number?
She asks. Still got it. She looks pleased by that.
How about tomorrow night at Malone's? Text me during the day to confirm?
Sounds great.
Perfect. See you then.
She squeezes my arm briefly, then hurries toward the same building Summer just disappeared into. I guess I have a date tomorrow night.
13. Summer. As I get comfy in my seat in the History of Fashion lecture hall, I try to remind myself that I'm all about girl power. We live in a society where too many women tear each other down instead of raising each other up. That's absurd to me. We need to empower one another. Teach future generations of girls that it's important to stand together.
Once upon a time, we had a common goal and a common enemy. We were burning bras and fighting for the right to vote. Now we're body shaming each other on social media and blaming